You are listening to a PERC podcast brought to you by the Property and Environment Research Center in Bozeman, Montana. As part of our free market environmentalism workshop, this episode features Jonathan Click presenting on Do Clean Development Mechanisms Reduce Emissions?
So Adito asked me to do this. You know, I don't do environmental stuff in general. I'm a regression monkey. Like Dino said, I already have a shop set up. I have the one kid get the data, the other kid run the regressions, the other kid write the paper. But those kids don't know anything about environmental stuff, so I don't really know what I was going to do. So I had to go out and look and see, are there any sort of open, sort of relevant questions that have sort of big policy relevance right now? And the big one that I sort of hit upon is, it turns out sort of the first phase of Kyoto is expiring at the end of the year. And one of the big things that's being reevaluated or at the end of 2012 that needs to be sort of reformulated, reevaluated, is something known as these clean development mechanisms. So under Kyoto, specifically Article 12, there's sort of a mechanism set up whereby the UN, in its infinite wisdom, decided to help what are known as Annex B countries, you know, the sort of the developed countries, Germany, France, et cetera, meet their own commitments to emission reductions under Kyoto by having sort of a nice complementary system that would allow or help developing nations also reduce their emissions. So these clean development mechanisms are basically set up such that if I, you know, India or China or some other developing nation undertakes some emission reduction program that meets various criteria, I can actually get payments from the Annex B countries, right? And the Annex B countries can effectively buy my emissions reductions to offset their own obligations under Kyoto. And so what are those particular criteria? Basically, there's three of them. Only two of them are particularly important. The unimportant one is this has to be voluntary. No country can kind of force another country into one of these deals. But the two important ones are these developing country emission reduction programs need to generate real measurable long-term benefits related to the mitigation of climate change. What that means, it's not all clear. It's certainly not spelled out in Kyoto itself. There are various sort of UN committees set up to make those determinations. The third one that's been particularly controversial or questionable is that these reductions in emissions have to be what it's called additional. If you're an economist, you would call them marginal. That is, these have to be projects that are undertaken only because this UN program exists, right? If this is a reduction thing that you would have undertaken otherwise, you're not supposed to be able to get credit for it. You're not supposed to be able to sell those emissions reductions to the Annex B countries. Lots of potential problems with these things from that standpoint, right? That is, how do you actually determine that you've reduced emissions? The UN, to settle that one, has about 10,000 different rubrics, right? Depending on what kind of project you're engaging in, there's sort of a book that the UN walks you through and says, this is how you determine what your emissions baselines would have been, here's how you count what the emissions reductions are, and this is how we're going to determine whether or not you're actually reducing emissions. And these books are sort of broken up by project type. You know, if I want to set up some wind turbines or something like that, it tells me how to actually calculate what the emissions reductions would be. That third criterion is much more problematic. How do you determine additionality? The UN kind of shrugs its shoulders, right? It says, well, we have these committees set up, and you know, we kind of trust them that they'll be good to look at your project and determine whether or not it's actually additional. But you know, what people all suspect is if I'm China and I want to have one of these projects and it's not additional, I just hire KPMG and they sort of rejigger the numbers, and you know, all of a sudden it's now additional. Right? And the UN hasn't come up with sort of a good way to solve that particular problem. Now, even given those big problems, by many metrics, these clean development mechanisms have been stunningly successful. Right? There's been a ton of them certified by the UN. The market in the sort of emission reduction permits to be sold to the developing countries is sort of held up as a poster child for a well-functioning market in these kinds of things. It's got lots of volume and things like that. To give you an idea of how many projects we're talking about, the in principle projects could have been sort of back certified back to 2000, but in fact the first project was undertaken in 2005, and in that first year you only had one project. But since then you've had, through 2010, you had sort of 800 projects in that year. In total, as of right now, you've had something like 5,000 projects, right? So it's actually, in terms of sort of quantifiable metrics, it seems to have been a pretty successful program. In terms of the emissions reductions that it supposedly generated, those two have followed sort of the similar pattern, right? Started off a little bit slowly, but then really caught fire. I stop everything at 2010 for data limitation reasons. You can actually look at all the projects and their supposed emissions reductions through up until about last month, right? There's a UN website. It doesn't work very well, shocking, given that it's the UN, right? But if you can get onto it and it actually sort of works, you can look up all these different programs. Okay. However, as I kind of suggested, there are bigger problems potentially as to whether this is actually making a difference. But before we get to that, let's talk about Kyoto in general. Which countries have actually kind of hit their targets? If you look at what the Annex B countries committed to and what's actually occurred as of 2010, a lot of countries haven't gotten anywhere close. Some countries have done relatively well, right? France sort of beat its obligation, which was to get emissions to the point that they were in 1990. They've actually exceeded that by about 8%. Germany did similarly well. Holland kind of is hitting its target. Russia didn't really have a target, but they're included, I guess, because they look good. Sweden's done pretty well. And the UK's done very well. But this is their emissions reductions net of any of the credits that they've purchased. And these countries that have actually met their goals have done a lot with these permits. France bought 130 of these projects. UK bought 1,500 of these projects. If you look over all the projects, these countries alone account for 60% of having purchased the credits and things like that, right? So if those countries actually have met their targets as they look to have, it's all because of these CDM projects. So we would kind of like to know, did the CDMs themselves actually reduce emissions in these host countries, in these developing nations? That is, are those two criteria actually satisfied? Are we getting sort of actual appreciable reductions in emissions, and are those reductions that wouldn't have occurred but for this program? Okay. So that's the big question that I think a lot of people have asked. There's a guy named Michael Wera who's actually a climate scientist, but he's at the law school at Stanford. He's brought up sort of an additional or complementary concern. He says, okay, well, even if the program's working exactly like it ought to be, there's a problem here. As a developing nation, I can get credits for reducing any kind of greenhouse gases, but those reductions are automatically transferred into CO2 reduction credits. And CO2 is kind of the big thing that we really worry about. And so what if it's the case that China's reducing sort of what we might think of as at least different, but maybe even worse, not as bad greenhouse gases, and those are being used to offset CO2 emissions in the developing countries? It may actually be the case where it suggests that this program, even if it does reduce some greenhouse gases, it may actually be leading to increases in global CO2 emissions. And so he's kind of suggesting that in at the end of 2012, when this program is kind of reformulated, that we take seriously the idea that maybe we ought to have it be, the permits are for whatever greenhouse gas was actually reduced, right? Rather than having this kind of transference. as Dino said, I'm a regression monkey, so I run regressions. It's what I do. So I went and I got CO2 data, and I combined that with the UN data on these CDM projects. The sort of the comprehensive CO2 data stops in 2010, so that's why I'm sort of looking at that time period. And it's kind of important to do the analysis now because, as I said, this program is being restructured and reevaluated at the end of the year. We can't kind of wait for the next 2 years of data, although we of course, would like to. I run a basic fixed effects model. Now, in principle, and if you know, if you've ever heard me be a jerk in seminars, I always give everybody a hard time on their identification, and for most things, fixed effects isn't enough, and clearly that's true here, right? You probably would want better counterfactuals, et cetera, et cetera. However, if we look at the design of the UN program, they're not, at least if you read Kyoto, they're not interested in changing emissions relative to the but-for counterfactual. They're actually interested in reducing emissions from the existing baseline, right? So in that sense, I'm not so worried about having a fantastic counterfactual. I think in this case, at least as a first cut, something like a fixed effects model might be the way to go, where you basically say, look, take out every country's pre-existing baseline, look at what happens relative to baseline when they engage in these projects, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, to that extent, you may not even want year effects, right? You may not even want to sort of control for nonlinear trends that are going on in the world. You might even want to just have this be a country fixed effects model. But we'll see that that kind of doesn't matter for the punchline of the results. I do a couple of different things. It's not exactly clear how you want to look at this. It's probably not right, it's almost certainly not right, that you just want to look at the contemporaneous effect of a project in a given year. Why? Well, because it takes these projects a while to get going. Furthermore, these projects are multi-year projects, and so that suggests that you probably want to be looking at lagged effects, and you probably want to be looking at stock effects. But you do everything and do it all sorts of different ways, and the same punchline comes out. So I'm not going to be too worried about the specifics of the specification, although I'm happy to talk about it. You can't see that so well, but just some descriptive statistics. How many projects are there registered in any given year for a host country? On average, it's 3, but that's a little bit misleading, right? Because there are a number of countries that do 0, and China does a bazillion, right? So, how many CO2 emission reductions do you get from the average project? You get something like 5 million metric tons reduced per project, although there's lots of heterogeneity there too. The host countries, these are all developing nations. The average host country in the sample had a per capita income of about $6,500 in 2010 dollars. Okay. This is one of the tables from the paper, but they're all roughly the same. You run the regression, and when I started off the project, I just kept thinking, well, what can I do? This is relative to total CO2 emissions. These projects are relatively small, so I might have power problems. I might have some inference problems, right, because CO2 has huge sort of autocorrelation, et cetera, et cetera. And then I ran the regression. It turns out that I get the wrong sign, and I get significance anyway, but it's the wrong sign. And so, look, all the econometric niceties in the world aren't going to change the basic story, right? If you look at this, it turns out these projects have basically zero effect, right? Has zero effect if you're looking at contemporaneous, if you're looking at lagged, if you're looking at stock, if you're looking at lag stock. I don't put it in the paper because nobody ever believes these models. But if I run an Arulanoban GMM with all sorts of lags all over, you get the same answer, right? These CDMs aren't doing anything at all, basically. To carbon emissions. It's significant, but again, it's a significant and it's zero, right? How small is that? Well, if you end up having 100,000 metric, a project that reduces emissions by 100,000 metric tons, this would suggest that your per capita CO2 emissions go up by 0.001. That's as close. Okay, so what else? You might think there's some goofy background trends. Again, I'm not so sure this is what you'd actually want to look at, given the UN's own stated concerns, right? Their real goal is to sort of stop the world at a certain point. Their goal is not to change from counterfactual. But even if you were more interested in counterfactual, as a policy analyst, you're plenty interested in the counterfactual, regardless of what the UN says. You know, look, if these things change what would have otherwise happened, you know, we count that as a gain to some extent. I can throw in all sorts of kind of trends, you know, anything you want, it doesn't change. I can data mine stuff. That's Ben. He's my five-year-old. He's not good enough to do anything serious, so we have him do data mining. You can data mine stuff, and you can find a very small period at the end of the sample where if you throw in certain kinds of trends, you can flip the sign, but the magnitude is still zero, right? If you throw in all sorts of different control variables, it doesn't make a difference, okay? The salsi, I don't put them in the papers, but it holds true if you're worried about, you know, what about should we do a log specification, right? Because there's sort of, you know, goofy skewness in terms of CO2 production and things like that. Doesn't make a difference. You might say, well, why are you looking at per capita, right? UN cares about totals. I look at per capita just because, in general, when you do environmental stuff, you're interested in per capita. But if I do it in totals, it's the same thing. In fact, that zero has even more decimal points before it, right? It's, you know, it's really zero. So, you know, it's really hard to find that these things have any kind of an effect. Now, what are the concerns? You know, what if I were the jerk in the audience, what would I say? You know, look, this is fine, click, if you're writing this paper in 1990, but, you know, it just doesn't cut it now. Again, I think that concern's not so huge given what the UN itself says it's hoping to do with these projects. But certainly, you know, I could sort of do a better job looking within the sample, trying to match up countries in terms of, you know, even among developing countries, you could compare countries that engage in these projects and the countries that don't, look for, you know, pairs that have similar pre-existing trends or something like that. I could do it. I'm not so sure it answers the UN question, but it may tell us something about a program like this that would be useful. Again, in theory, I probably should have had big power problems here, right? These programs, even in the best story, are small relative to total emissions. But this isn't a power problem, right? You know, I'm getting decent precision. I'm just getting, you know, the wrong sign if you're a supporter of this project. Now, the real concern, the one that actually does bother me, you know, which we could address with more labor, and maybe I'll go that approach, is maybe there are appreciable effects on other greenhouse gases, right? Now, that doesn't solve the Michael Wehra concern, right? If you're really worried about CO2, this project looks, or this program looks like a total loser. But, you know, if there are reductions in other greenhouse gases, you know, maybe we can sort of look at that. Maybe things aren't quite as bad as this would kind of suggest. There hasn't been a lot of work done on this. There were some folks in GEAM last year who looked at China and looked at a couple districts in China and looked at where the projects were specifically slated, and they looked at some other pollutants, and they weren't finding any effects either. In fact, they were finding wrong sign as well, right? So I'm not so sure this can salvage things, but it's certainly an approach or an area one would want to go in if you wanted to actually complete the story. So it's a punchline. You know, look, these CDMs do nothing to reduce CO2, right? There's no reduction in developing countries, no matter how much you torture the data, they'll never confess, and you know, that's just a dead end. Given that there are credits posited on these things, this may mean that there are actually increases because of this program in global CO2, although that effect is likely trivial as well, you know, given the small magnitudes that we're finding here. Perhaps there are reductions of other pollutants that mitigate this concern, but I really do think that the punchline is this program needs to be severely restructured, if not abandoned. Okay, thanks.
To learn more about free market environmentalism, visit www.perc.org.